Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, everybody. It is day three and the final day of Metallica's Live at Blockchain Beach. I have the absolute pleasure to help close this out with the one and only editor-in-chief of Money 2020, Sanjeev Kalita. And we also have the founder and CEO of Metallica's, as you already know, and as I've previously mentioned the last 2 days, the CEO of Proton, the blockchain, the metal blockchain, and Metal Pay, Marshall Hainer. Gentlemen, thank you two so much for coming on the show today and closing it out with us. How are you two doing this morning?
Doing fantastic. Thanks, Eric. How's it going, Sanjeev?
I'm doing well now. It's like I feel the energy. I like after all these days of walking and running around meeting so many people, I was running on fumes on like Monday, and I don't know what I'm running on right now.
It's that last day hype, you know, the last day you got to squeeze everything in so you wake up with this burst of Money 2020 energy.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's always great to see you, so thank you for having me here.
Likewise. We were just saying how, you know, after all the years of Money 2020, just keeps getting bigger, floors expanding out, and you know, as I get older, I'm like, I gotta go to bed earlier so I can get up, I can see all these booths. The last day is like the last day to kind of squeeze it in, but you walk out on this floor and it's electric. It's awesome.
I love hearing that because when we started this, it was like we would not have envisioned what it is today.
I couldn't picture that, you know, flash forward a few years, we'll have this amazing, cool booth, and we'll be talking here with Sanjeev on the mic. Yeah.
I'm expecting us to be in, like, our own personal hover drones talking to each other on that.
You know, in the next 10 years, we'll be flying up in our flying cars, we'll have hover boots, right?
Yeah.
All types of cool George Jetson stuff, so.
So, Sanjeev, I have to ask you. Now that there's another Money 2020 in the books,
yeah,
what's on your mind for the next one? Is it a little too preemptive to think about the future right now? Is that an okay question?
No, that's actually a great question. I mean, a couple of things. We had the director of the CFPB, Rohit Chopra, announce, looking at open finance. And for me, that's particularly interesting, and I think that could open up a lot of new options and opportunities in terms of like how data is used within the fintech ecosystem.
Marshall, you and I were talking about this earlier. Like, I think that there's a lot of building going on right now, and it's like. Whereas like last year you're sprinting, so you don't really have the bandwidth to build, but now there's like a lot more like reflection and building.
Yeah, it's funny because in the crypto world we live in, sometimes we're in like our hyper crypto bubble, and then we forget, you know, the stocks are down, crypto's down, we're all building, fintech's building, TradFi's building, DeFi's building. But we're all kind of in this hyper mode, and I feel like every year there's a different theme. This year it's kind of like the open data, banking as a service kind of theme, and the productization of kind of all the payment stuff. In the past, it started with a lot of risk and anti-fraud, identity. Identity's always here. Crypto's always here.
Yeah.
But this year, definitely a lot of open data plays. Marqeta announced their bank banking as a service.
Yep.
We announced our Metal Pay as a service.
Yeah.
So big SaaS year.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. And it's... I mean, even, you know, thinking back to, you know, our conversations about metal, you know, so many years ago, and what you've built and where you're heading, did you envision that you'd be where you are today when you started building it?
I thought someday, but I didn't think in 2022 we'd be talking about, you know, opening a bank and you know, growing to the size we were. And it's crazy because fintech really does, it moves so fast.
Yeah.
And this conference is kind of an example of that, because every year I track the companies. A lot of the companies that you see out on the floor were partners. So we become partners through Money 2020.
Yeah.
But it's just awesome to see the products expand and things. Every year, this is the best place that I come to learn about how the industry is evolving. Because, you know, I'm subscribed to American Banker, FinTech, Crypto Mag, publications and things like that. But there's nothing quite like coming up and talking to the founders at an after party or go to the booth and really learn about what everyone's building.
So. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I can totally relate to that. Like you learn more in that like 1 to 5 minutes than you would like in like 5 hours of reading stuff and like I totally agree with you there.
Totally. And I think that this is a great conference too as well for business leaders to connect and kind of and forge those partnerships, because it's one thing when you get an email or someone says, hey, I know a risk company or I know a crypto company or something.
Yeah.
It's another thing when you can go up and you can ask them all the questions and it's not just the sales outreach and process, but like a genuine connection between companies.
I think, you know, to your point, like what question, like one of the things I found this year is that people just want to have a conversation and like on a person-to-person basis. And,
right.
And which I really enjoy. It doesn't. Yeah, you obviously talk about your company, but it's also very much like a, you know, person-to-person impression of various things and person-to-person exchange of ideas of where the world might end up or which direction it's heading. I find those conversations to be richer and much more fun to participate in as well.
And you raise a good point too. You know, when you're getting into business with a partner, you're also getting into business with the people, the founders, the executives, the employees. And so it's great to put a name to a face. It's great to meet people in person. Yeah. And we're in Las Vegas, so you know, when this conference floor closes down, we're gonna go hit the tables. We're gonna go to the club. We're gonna have a good time. We get to really know each other. So.
I, while you're hitting the tables, I think I'm gonna hit the bed.
I walked to the casino last night and did a little. What's that gif where you go? Yeah. No. Yeah.
Neither of y'all mentioned the pool. Is it too cold outside for you guys?
I think there's like a wind advisory out there right now, isn't there or something? Yeah. The first year I've heard of that.
I'm afraid if I went in the pool, I'd like fall asleep and drown in there or something.
Now, I would knock on wood.
You can't stop moving. Sanjeev, can't stop moving.
Isn't that the beauty of Money 2020? You just keep moving at a rapid pace. And I don't know, one thing that kind of stood out that you both just mentioned, especially when you're spending those 1 to 5 minutes going to every booth or meeting every executive, CEO, et cetera, is in those 5 minutes, you're hearing like a whole accumulation of either their last year before this past Money 2020, or you're actually just learning about this company for the first time. They're finally in the door. They finally have a seat at the table when they're here at Money 2020, and it just... It brings, how I receive it is they're bringing you into their ecosystem and you're bringing them into your ecosystem. And that's kind of been the overall beauty that I've noticed in my first Money 2020s. And I just think that's been amazing thus far.
Yeah, I really do agree with you on that. And I think like one of the things that I've noticed is that, and you know, perhaps you both can relate to this, but like when you, a lot of times, companies will, on their marketing material, will default to the lowest common denominator. So a lot of it just tends to sound the same. But like when you're able to like have a conversation, then you get to like the edge cases and like sort of like the things that are quirky about something. And that quirkiness and the edge cases are actually like more often than not the differentiating factors. And so like that's why you can like really pinpoint that. And you know that's an ask like okay what and so I you know to your point like I think that's why that for me it adds a lot more value.
That sounds
like it's interesting. It's kind of like those creative collisions, right? Like I was talking to a data company the other day that primarily does anti-fraud, and we started realizing all the cool decentralized applications for data attestation that that were typically used for anti-fraud but could be used for customer satisfaction, loyalty, and other things. And we were just kind of geeking out about digital identity. But what do you think, Sanjeev, what's one of the coolest like technologies you've seen this year? You feel free to shill a company or anything, but just in general, what do you think's like the coolest thing you've seen or what's it really interesting you this year on the floor?
So I actually, and but
perhaps I'll go back to Sunday because that was the day that I had the most sleep and the most neurons functioning normally. But like I interviewed the head of blockchain for Shopify, and we were talking about like token gated commerce.
Oh, that's really cool.
It was really cool. Like just thinking in terms of like how an NFT and like when you think about commerce and identity, one of the things is like, okay, well, can't you already do that with existing user experiences? But then when we started talking about like how the NFT could sort of flip the equation, if you will, and where the merchant has to verify themselves to the consumer as opposed to vice versa,
right?
And sort of making that experience more interesting, more fluid, but potentially adding a lot in terms of like the data ecosystem that you just talked about.
I think the token gated piece for like a Shopify is really cool because when you think about Web3, you think about how this community evolved organically, and they started with just plugins for Discord, token gated Discord, so you want to get into the chat room with the token, but all the way into 2022, 2023, into years into the future, we're going to see this Web3 mentality, decentralized model coming into traditional fintech, where and you already see it with Facebook, with Meta, right, where they added NFTs to Instagram, to Facebook. So that idea, and also Twitter, right? So the idea of PFPs and, token-gated access, it's not just some little niche subculture that, me and my friends like to hang out in, but it's going to become something that I think is going to become really mainstream, right? Like you go and you buy a pair of Adidas sneakers, and you get an NFT that could link to some metaverse experience, but also could give you some token-gated access to a special area for other Shopify merchants that are Adidas partners, for example.
So I actually also on Sunday, I interviewed Meta's head of commerce and fintech, and we were talking about the metaverse and Web3, and that was also very fascinating because we're still at the early days, and
of course,
and so there's still a lot of infrastructure that needs to happen. I do feel like it's a bit of like the early days where you're like feeling the walls and trying to figure out like what.
Where's the light switch?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you turn it on, and you're like, wow, this room is completely different than I could see it in the dim light.
Yeah, but I think we will find the light switch, but it's like you have to be in the room in order to like I think be able to participate in it.
My take on the metaverse is really that the metaverse is like this. Everybody thought it was this AR VR, well, primarily virtual reality thing. But I think it's going to be a mix of augmented reality, virtual reality, and then also just regular your web 2D experience and how it links with the digital identity, the PFPs, the token, the NFTs, the token gated access. And then I think it's people got it confused because you go back to, and this is kind of origins for cryptocurrency, right? Second Life and virtual currencies, the early non-decentralized virtual currencies. But I think that like when you look at like what Meta's doing. And some of the other platforms, they're kind of looking at like the almost VR chat of Oculus.
Yeah.
But where I think it's going to really take off is going to be the retail shopping experience. I might be wrong, but I just think we're in a post-COVID world.
Yeah.
Everything went digital, tap to pay.
Yeah.
And I just saw on Twitter the other day a new Unreal Engine release of just render.
Yeah.
And for a solid 30 seconds, I couldn't tell the difference between reality and what was a video game because it looks so good. So flash forward in a few years, I think we might be shopping in virtual malls and all the retail, because that's where I think the big money could go with,
I think that's the way I'm thinking about it too. And like to use a different analogy, like if you think about like maps, and like think back to like 10 years ago, pre-smartphone, I used to print out maps, and when I was going on a business trip, I'd be like, okay, this is how I'm going. So then I would have a printout of the directions and what I would follow. Then when you get to smartphones, now, like, you can look at, you have turn-by-turn directions. You could potentially look at the map and look for red or green, like, to figure out where the... But then thinking to the, more towards the metaverse, like, say if you could, like, jump ahead 5-10 miles... you're in the traffic jam, and you're able to go real time, like 5-10 miles ahead, and sort of see, okay, it's a crash, it should be okay, or so should I stay on the highway, should I get off the highway? So like I think like having real time experiences where you're getting data from different feeds, I think you know I think that will open up a lot in terms of this sector.
I think so too. I think the the metaverse is, there's a lot of buzz around it, a lot of hype around it.
Yeah.
But there's definitely something there, and I think it's, you know, a big part of that is, you know, the virtual commerce linking with the real commerce, but also like you said, real time experiences, real time data, and stuff like that into these virtual worlds. I think it's just incredible, you know, where we're gonna go. I ran into an old friend who just joined the Yuga Labs team, and she was telling me about kind of the race, the secret metaverse race going on behind the scenes with Meta, Yuga, and you know, there's a lot of really cool stuff happening, but we're not really seeing all of it because there's a lot of big money trying to figure this out, and I think that's the secret, is nobody really 100% knows where it's gonna land.
Yeah.
So.
Conceptually, one thing that you mentioned earlier, Marshall, was that it's we're in 2022, and what I've been saying, especially for the last couple of days, is the fact that it's only 2022. There's a double meaning with that, and what I mean by that is we're still in a very emerging phase in terms of not just cryptocurrency, metaverse, but just at the pinnacle of innovation. There's just so much more time for things to kind of not only be in the limelight, but to be perfected. And a lot of these things take time. And when you think about, even with like cryptocurrency, when Bitcoin first came out in 2009, give or take, it was what could be considered a secondary product or a secondary currency, or what some people would call, and I'm sorry to say this, but not necessarily a part of reality. It was like a virtual currency in theory, of course. But now, looking back 13 years later, it's in the limelight. It's being discussed more. I can't tell you how many booths there here at Money 2020 of people endorsing cryptocurrency, and there's a mass adoption. And when you think about things like the metaverse and how it's just been introduced within like the last couple years, what is it going to look like 5 years from now? Something that you mentioned, Sanjeev, is it start like with the maps, it's growing and it's evolving. And we went from the printed papers, and now we can actually see life-size buildings within Apple Maps, for instance. Mm. Who knows what it's going to look like in 5 years, 10 years, all this time to kind of let it cook, perfect itself. Possibilities are really endless, and the way I see
like
it.
I like this question. I'm curious to hear Sanjeev's answer. My thoughts are that the blockchain, what it really does at the heart is it keeps everyone honest, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the key, is the shared ledger that we can all share this data, because you know, in the past there have been issues with banking. There have been banks that have gone insolvent. We look at like Lehman Brothers or Deutsche Bank or different things like that have happened. And then also when it comes to sharing data, there's been big data breaches, credit bureaus, things like that. And so how do we share data without having it breached, right? And then also how do we have that authenticity of data? And I think, what I think is going to happen is blockchain is going to evolve beyond just the settlement and currency layer, but also into the data and an information layer that will act as this connective tissue. So, when Sanjeev and I first met, it was all about the big B, the orange Bitcoin, because there wasn't much else, right? There were no stable coins, really.
Right.
I think when we met, Tether was only like a year old or something like that, and no one even used it.
Yeah.
But now we've got stable coins on the floor. We've got a lot of companies that are like doing blockchain analytics. I saw TRMs here, Chainalysis. But I think what's going to happen is everyone's going to have a blockchain play, but it won't be necessarily Bitcoin or currency. I think it's going to be different proprietary blockchains, each bank having their own blockchain, and not just doing currency and settlement, but also digital identity that will connect. And we talked about the token gated access, but I think that there's going to start to be this kind of agreement in the industry as we mature more, what blockchains are going to act as kind of central hubs, and then I think every company is going to have their own version of a blockchain that connects to that hub.
Yeah, and I think that point is spot on. And Like another analogy that I'll just bring up. Like, so for example, like, you know, the telephone system. Like, we all have these smart, you know, phones, and we have numbers that identify us, and they feed into a network that gets routed. And like, so we all have bought into this system, the telephone system, and we bought into it for that single use case, that single purpose. Now when we're, like, I think what we're talking about here is like buying into a system for much more, like, a where you might not even know what the end use cases might be, but like that power of that buy-in into that system is going to, like, potentially kick off a lot. And then, on, you know, the flip side is that, like, you know, for example, even with the telephone system, you have to worry about, like, spoofing, you have right. to worry about robocalls and things like that, and so have proper tools in place to protect it so that you're able to keep the trust in that system so that people continue to participate in, you know, for what they signed up for. And similarly, I think that that's going to put the onus on, obviously, because it's so powerful and blockchain can be used for so many different things, like that will be paramount. I don't know. I don't know if I'm making sense at this point.
No, that's
not clear.
That's, you know, it's a good analogy, right? Because you know, it kind of goes back to, like, the early web. You know, email also kind of similar, right? Like, we subscribe to a protocol,
yeah.
and then we pick one protocol, and then once we have that, we can build all this infrastructure on it.
Yeah.
And I think the interesting thing is kind of like, you know, phone's a good example, because look at the industries built on a lot of SMS 2FA.
Yeah.
And now when you come to a conference like this, everybody's saying, don't use it. You know, use our product. Use our proprietary yeah. authentication product, right? Yeah. I've seen a bunch on the floor. Yeah. But, you know, you make a really good point. Blockchain technology as a foundation, and the foundation that's going to be for the next, you know, when was SMS first, did that first appear? 1992, 95 yeah. or 96 or something, yeah. I don't know. You know, that's, we're in the 1996 of data, of web data, mm-hmm. in the same way that we were in 1996, 2022 versus 1996. That was the age of telephony and yeah. the early web dial-up
yeah.
and stuff like that. So we built all the foundations on that.
Yeah.
And so now I think in 2022, this is where we're building the foundations for interconnectivity, because mm. all of these different APIs and systems, they're all centralized, but you know, and we're connected through our partners, through, you know, you may use a platform on here where one identity provider connects to another identity provider, and we're all, you know, connected in the web.
Yeah.
But, you know, flash forward in the next 30 years, 20 years,
yeah.
this is when the foundation is being built mm. for that interconnectivity. And
yeah.
I think we're trying to decide, there's one thing that has become very clear to me is the EVM
mm.
is kind of a Ethereum virtual machine, has become a standard for smart contracts.
Mm.
So a lot of people use that. But I think it's still up in the air. What's the what is the central hub? What's the L0? Is it Cosmos? Is it Metal Blockchain? Is it Polkadot? Is
yeah.
it Avalanche? You know, Polygon has gotten a lot of traction in the smart contracting world. But I still feel like every couple of years it changes. So
you bring up a very interesting point with EVMs and smart contracts. So for example, you know, I'm building Guppy, which is a credit bureau built on blockchain technology, and we started building on it before, we were really early and felt a lot of the horrible pain points whenever you deal with a new technology, right? So like we were trying to build something that's decentralized. And so back then, you know, our smart contract, so we have a single smart contract per user. But then if you fast forward to today, like, I think a lot of the blockchain, consumer blockchain systems, that they'll have a singular smart contract and put all their consumers on there, so it's like not decentralized, and so we could be talking about the same thing, smart contracts for consumers, but the way that you implement it, like, has very, very different dramatically different implications.
And it's changed so rapidly, right? You look at just even like NFT standard going from 725 to 1155, and yeah. I think there's a lot newer ones, but yeah. you know, the standards even are evolving so quickly and rapidly.
Yeah.
You know, certain things like EVM have taken hold, you know, yeah. Solidity as a language. It's really interesting to see. We doubled down on EVM with Metal Blockchain and that kind of vision that, you know, blockchain as a service, corporations will want EVM. But at the same time, we also see, big pull for Hyperledger. We see a big pull for different DLT and stuff like that. But yeah, I always joke at Metallicus, one day equals 10 in the world of crypto. You know, so when we celebrate someone's 1 year, that's your 10 year, basically.
So are you telling me that I'm 500 years old?
You are immortal, in fact. that when you combine Money 2020 with the crypto, it is actually a multiplier. So this man is immortal.
Hey, you get better with time, too, just like fine wine, don't you think?
Indeed.
Yeah. I love it. All right, so just kind of taking it all back and just soaking it all in for Money 2020. Have you anticipated, Sanjeev, out of curiosity, looking back at the last 10 or... It's been about 10 years, 2020. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever expected this many crypto booms to come into play, looking back at it now? Have you ever expected this many crypto booms?
Yeah, no, I would not have. So just to take you back...
Of course.
Like the first year, we had one session on Blockchain 101. The second year, we had... I put together another session on Blockchain 101. And like one more session about Bitcoin, Bitcoin 101, Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
That's day four on my brain. Like, it's but in any case, then the third year, I helped put together what was called like a whole track on Bitcoin. We called it Bitcoin World, and
I remember that.
Yeah, and it was a struggle, to be perfectly honest. To find companies that were that had stuff in market that were not just like vaporware.
Was like 2017 or 20?
This was even before that. I'm scared to say any numbers at this point because like if you asked me on day one, like I could have answered that, but now I'm
you're immortal. We understand all the years blend together. After 500 years, it's hard to remember one year.
But in any case, like going from there to where we are today with like so many real solutions with billions of dollars of assets and transactions and millions of consumers, it's actually a really, it makes me feel great. Also like it's sort of, in my mind, it like, I think just sort of shows the opportunity that's there. For the space as a whole.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think that crypto really did for the TradFi industry was tighten the anti-fraud.
Yeah.
Because it really tested the boundaries of the anti-fraud. In the past, when it was, illicit funds, a system would get hacked and fiat funds would try to get out of the system.
Yeah.
They were still using traditional financial rails.
Yeah.
When cryptocurrency came into effect, the risk profile increased greatly. And so I think that, it's really interesting to see a lot of the risk in anti-fraud systems now. I saw Sardines out here. I saw a bunch of different platforms out here that are focusing on that. And I think that, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency really tightened that down because there was just this element of once it leaves the system and gets a certain level of payment hardness that we haven't seen before, because in the past we could alert another bank, another financial institution, they could freeze that account, they could claw it back.
Yeah.
Now we're in this decentralized system. So I think one of the things I've noticed is the biometrics, the anti-fraud has gotten way better over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
I saw one on the floor that pulls all the text off, and even if there's like scratches on your ID, it can use AI to get around that.
Oh, wow.
It's getting really, really impressive. But I love how crypto kind of like is this self-evolving organism and helps, the banking industry tighten, but then also world governments, reconsider their own currencies for central bank digital currencies. And I know the Federal Reserve comes here every year and has a presence. So it's just cool to see this this evolution in TradFi and crypto. You see it all here at Money 2020. So
I love it. All right, Sanjeev, Marshall, Money 2020, Metallicus. I know it's been 4 days, but, and this is my final question, and...
Hit us with it.
Any final thoughts you want to give to everybody before we...
I guess the final thoughts for me are that, you know, I'm physically tired, but I'm mentally pumped and excited. And I think that that is I think there's so much more to go I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, me too. My thoughts are just the space is evolving so rapidly, and if you're in the industry and you haven't come to this event, you have to come to Money 2020, because this is the place to connect with all the industry leaders, learn about what's going on in the industry. I always end almost all my streams when people ask me final thoughts, I say education and crypto is everything. Well, if you want to get educated in crypto at the intersection of cryptocurrency, traditional finance, and fintech, come to Money 2020. Next year is going to probably be twice the size of this, so you got to be here if you're in the industry. So that's my final thought.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sanjeev Kalita, Marshall Hainer, thank you both so much for hopping on the show.
Thank you. Closing it
off on a high note, that was day 4 of Money 2020, but day 3 of Metallicus Live at Blockchain Beach. I want to thank everybody so much for tuning into our live stream for the last several days. There was so many amazing conversations, so many great people hopping on this podcast, this live stream. And you know what? We're not going to stop there. We're going to be back. We're definitely going to be back. We're going to definitely have a lot more conversations, a lot more dialogues, both at Money 2020 and other places beyond. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Stay tuned. Follow us on Twitter at We Are Metallicus, Metal Pays Me, Proton XBR. Stay on Metallicus.com. We got so many things. We got so many things we want to keep continuing to show you guys. So download our applications, Metal Pay. Download the Web Off Wallet. And my name is Eric Lyons. Thank you all so much, and keep on rocking in the free world with Metallicus.
Thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Yeah.